Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. All of you that are joining us live, thanks for joining us live on YouTube and Facebook. Those of you who are entertaining yourselves on a long drive on a podcast in the next couple of days, thank you very much for being a part of No Spin Rodeo. Welcoming the counterparts to this riveting media extravaganza called No Spin Rodeo. The lead lady, the first lady of pro rodeo journalism, Kendra Santos. Hello, Kendra.
Hello.
Hello. Well, that was a... Are you in a meek and mild mood today?
I'm not in a meek and mild mood, but I am grinding my teeth at what just happened on social media, and it just ticks me off. It's like, how low will these people go that someone, a Facebook page called Western Saddle for Sale Under $3,000 copied and pasted my story, and it has 2,500 shares right now. This is social media today, ladies and gentlemen. Not to mention that what I reported on happened a couple years ago. They're just maggots. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, and so we now see kind of where Kendra is today, which is probably bad for me. Hello, Greg. You look spry in your black polo. How are you doing?
Let me try that again with my mic on. I'm doing great today.
It was on. We could hear you. We could hear you. Can you hear us? I hope so.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. We're going to run through a few things today, mainly the hot topic. But let's hit a little rodeo news. Do you want to lead us through this, Kendra? And we'll hit just the highlights real quick. Big stuff only.
Sure. Okay. So there were two things to me that's very much stand out. And one thing that's going on right now that is like a personal and professional close to my heart is the fact that 37 years later, the Red Bluff Roundup is this week, and they just unveiled a statue of Lane Frost in Red Rock. And it was pretty cool. Like, we're recording this on tax day, April 15th. And April 17th, 1988, was the first match at the Red Bull Roundup between Lane and Red Rock. So the Challenge of Champions, for those who are too young to remember, so many of the youngsters, you know, the young bull riders and stuff, they weren't born yet. But, you know, the 1988 world champion bull and the 1987 world champion bull rider went head to head in a 7 rodeo match. You know, Red Rock retired unridden in his career, 309 attempts, I think it was. And then they came back the year after they both won the world. They came back in 1988 for this Challenge of Champions, which was actually brilliant. It was, I'm like, it was so basic and yet so brilliant, because it made mainstream headlines for rodeo like somewhat unmatched, truth be told. And I mean, people like the New York Times and, you know, that kind of a magnitude. It was amazing. But the very first match, and Lane said, you know, the one day that of his career that he ever got, you know, he was the most popular guy, right? And that he ever got second most applause with that day in Red Bluff, because Red Rock was the hometown hero, and the crowd went crazy and they wanted Red Rock to win. Well, he did win that day. But cool that this bronze, okay, the same artist, Jim Stuckenberg, who's a world-renowned artist and has pieces in Ronald Reagan's collection and everything else, and him and his wife, Anita, were longtime renters of mine when I bought a little place here so that my boys could go to the best schools in the area. So that's small worldy, but he was the same artist. This too is a larger than life bronze that he did for Red Bluff, and he's the same artist who made in 2014 made the bronze of Lane and Red Rock from for Clovis for their centennial celebration.
It's gorgeous.
It is. It really is gorgeous and really cool.
Greg, can you bring that full screen for me? I want to look at that.
It came from my little area here on the central coast of California, and John Groundy came down here to my little neck of the woods and personally hauled that bronze back up to Red Bluff and put it out in the barn at the Groundy Ranch, and, you know, till they you know could set it up, and then they covered it with a parachute for the unveiling this week. So it's pretty cool, and I think fun to relive as we go into the spring run is, okay, Red Rock won the first one, and Red Rock won the second match in Clovis, and then Lane became the first to ever ride Red Rock at Reading, and then Lane struck again the fourth match in Livermore, the fifth match in Sisters. Red Rock came out on top at St. Paul on the 4th of July that year in 1988. And so it was 3-3. So like all eyes were, you know, on this thing, and people just everywhere were following this. And in Spanish Fork, the final showdown, Lane came out on top and ended up winning it 4-3. But that was an extraordinary experience. And I felt like a few of us were kind of just, I don't know if we looked into it or were tapped by God, or I don't know what, but it was like that being a part of that and living that with those guys was I say one of the great honors of my life and career. It was really cool. And there were, you know, things that have come out, like, you know, I'm thinking about this, and it's like Lane that year in 1988, Lane had his bull riding university at the Groundy Ranch. And then, you know, of course, we lost Lane that next summer at the Daddy of Them All, you know, the summer of 1989. And so he already was going to do his bull riding university that, you know, after that year's NFR 2. And then, you know, of course, we lost him. Well, that's the year that Tuff won the gold buckle, riding his last one, 8 seconds for the win, and another 8 for Lane. You remember that? Uh-huh. And then, so the, you know, Lane's buddies honored Lane's school in 1989 at the Groundy Ranch. There they are. So that's Cody Lambert, Ty Pud Murray, Tuff Groundy, and Jim Sharp. And so Tuff has a shiner because he stepped up at the school to show the kids how it was done and got jerked down and stomped and ended up at the emergency room. And so he's got a nice shiner there. But and then they all went skiing in Tahoe. And so anyway, and then, you know, that following year after Lane died, that summer, 1990, Lane and Red Rock were inducted into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame together. And that was, you know, really cool. Anyway.
Well, and I don't want to get the reporter right, but it was the first time, one of the first times that rodeo had made mainstream media. And wasn't it George Michaels that covered?
George Michael fell in love with Lane and Tuff. And, you know, yes. And we all miss George so much because, you know, he had the George Michael Sports Machine on NBC, but he was like, he just became part of our family. And I remember going to the White House with Cody and Tuff, and we went to George's house in Maryland, and, you know, he had a really cool barn and horses and all these, and we go into his house and there are mantles just lined with all these statues. I'm like, what the heck are those? They were Emmy Awards, you know? But George Michael, like when Lane died at Cheyenne and we were all back there and everybody's laughing and George is talking to Tuff and Lane, like, you know, before that and stuff, he was like family. And when Lane died that day at Cheyenne, you know, George flew straight back to DC to put together a show about, you know, honoring Lane on NBC, you know, and I darted straight back to Colorado Springs to write the story. And it's like, anyway, a few of us were just sort of bonded forever by all of that. And And anyway, Red Rock died 5 years after Lane. He was really old for a bull, 18 years old, and he was buried under an oak tree at the Granny Ranch. But they had spent, Lane had spent really great times in his life there in Red Bluff. And so that's really cool that they're doing that this week, and brings back a lot of great memories. But there's a woman named Vicki Stroud who was really instrumental. She was the Red Bluff Rotary president, and she spent like the last 5 years, you know, raising money and making this happen. So way to go,
Red. Beautiful. I saw it on a trailer when they picked it up. Someone posted. I saw it heading that way, and I thought that's pretty cool. That's very really cool. Because we've got a bronze of Casey Field in front of our stadium at Salt Lake. And I will say those things are harder to keep clean than you think. I'll tell you that. They don't stay shiny bronzy like you want them to without a lot of oil rub. So that thing looks great. It's beautiful and fitting. Absolutely fitting.
And the artist, incidentally, since I knew him personally as a renter all those years, he was born deaf. And the other part of his professional life was that he worked at the racetrack under D. Wayne Lucas and helped train racehorses. He's a pretty interesting guy. And, you know, trained racehorses for a long time, but pretty great, some of the art he has created, but that it would loop around and be so personal. Because I remember when the first documentary about Lane and Red Rock, it was actually called Challenge of Champions, was done, a guy named David Witkower did it, and Grownie, and Sue Roseoff, who was the master at photographing Lane Frost, she was in on all of that. And Luke Perry, they were having a showing here in Paso Robles where this bronze was created. And there was like a film festival, and they were having a showing here. And Luke Perry, John Grownie, Sue Roseoff, they came to my house here in the boonies for dinner that night. And Luke Perry single-handedly ate my entire pineapple upside down cake. My children witnessed it right here in this kitchen. Yes. And it was like this little skinny guy. But that guy really took playing Lane in the movie 8 Seconds. He was legit. He cared. That was really cool. And I'm so sorry he died young too.
Yeah, no, I remember those guys. I'm pretty sure those guys came to the PBR finals because I remember. And I think it was for that movie. And if it's a different movie, it may be in a different movie.
Might have been a different movie because I remember that too.
Yeah, but here's what I remember from that particular one. Kiefer Sutherland came in and was going to play, I think it was Flint, right? Well, I didn't realize how odd those actors are, right? They're like he just followed him around and would just out of the blue start trying to talk like him. And then we're sitting in the production office after, and I started to strike up a conversation, and he started talking to me as if he had just performed. And I was like, you know, I was actually creeped out. I just said, hey, you know, I got to go do something right now. You keep on being Flint or whatever it was. But
was that the movie Ring of Fire?
It might have been that exactly. That might have been it. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he was Flint. I'm 90% sure, unless my memory's bad. But this character acting or whatever it is they do, these guys take it very seriously. Yeah.
And yet, I will say, Luke Perry made a fan of me because when I was the director of communication for the PRCA, Luke Perry would come to town for the NFR, and he was cool. Like I would have, you know, Make-A-Wish kids and different things. And I remember, you know, I could call Luke Perry and Tuff Hedeman and say, hey, is there any way that you would, you know, meet me in the Bull Riders locker room at whatever, 5 o'clock. And there's this kid, he's as a terminal kid who's a huge fan of the movie or whatever. Those guys were there every time. And
was upside down cake there?
Very Lane of them to do these things too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool. Well, very cool. Fitting. So the big event, and I'll lead on it, of course, was the American. I'm not going to dive into any particular details. Overall, I think that the event was well done. And overall, well done. You know, the critics and all of us can find, I can give you a list of stuff that I wrote down that, you know, we can all, it can always be better. But I thought it was well done. I'll kind of go with some of the things in the bronc riding. I think that one could argue that the winning ride wasn't on the rankest horse in the pen that of those four. I was going to say in the bull riding, because just to clarify this for those of you that kind of don't know the rules and stuff, what they did in the bull riding, and it's ironic because a little bit more of what I talk about will come back to this, but Pacheco, whenever he won all the money, they went back to times and qualified people forward, so you didn't have to make a qualified ride. Well, one of the things that happened after that through conversations is that in order to advance or to move forward and to qualify your way to the million, you had to make an 8-second ride. You had to make a qualified ride. And I love that. I think that's exactly right, personally. So because there was questions, there was only two bull riders. Well, for one, there were two injured bull riders that were scheduled to be there that I think it was two that pulled out. But those were the qualified rides, and that's why there were two bull riders. And I think they're darn lucky that they got one qualified ride, you know, out of those two on that final four. And so I thought, you know, so that's why, if you were wondering why was there only two bull riders, it's because nobody advanced with a qualified ride, and they did not advance them on buck-off times. So when I said times, that's buck-off times. Sometimes in some of these events, they'll advance people who rode the bull the longest but did not make a qualified ride, and they did not do that. And so that's the other thing. And then, well, I'm just going to kick this off, Kendra, because we're flying here. I've noticed, and I heard this earlier, but I didn't put much attention to it. There's scuttlebutt out there, and we're the ones that address scuttlebutt. So the $1 million, let's talk about the $1 million that was not won. There's some stuff flying around behind the barbed wire fence that the $1 million may not advance to next year. And so here's the things that I'm going to say on that. I don't have anything to report on that. I don't know. I will be shocked if the million doesn't advance and they're not riding for 2 million. And here's why. Precedent has been set. They gave the bull rider 2 million. So precedent's been set for one. Number two, and probably the biggest, it's in the rule book. It's in their rule book. So, you know, again, I would be shocked if it doesn't advance forward. And number three is it's been reported. I mean, SI reported it. You know, it came out of somewhere in Teton Ridge that this was rolling forward. And because I don't think these people look at the rule book quite as much as Kendra and I would. But now, I guess what we don't know that maybe has stirred this conversation, and this is a hypothesis. I've got zero sources or anything to prove this, but maybe it's what do they do with that million that it does move forward? I don't know, and I did not research this before the show, that it was defined that million goes into the bonus pool. It very well may be. I've got to look back and see. So there's a lot of work. There's a lot of stuff out there. You know, I heard that at one of the events that a high-ranking Teton official was at, Deeren, right before the American, that it was stated that if the million wasn't won, it would go to charity. And I got wind of that, and I was like, no. And the only reason I said no was because of the rule book. So again, unless Kendra, unless you have something to report that I don't, That's what I know so far, is that we don't know, but I will be shocked if this is in the rules and precedent's been set and broadcaster said, I mean, this is out that there would be a reversal. Now, maybe they're going to adjust it. Again, I that's a hypothesis that I can't back up. I think that's interesting and relevant because that's current American conversation. There's been some other stuff out there, but overall, hats off to everybody. Hats off to the Teton Ridge team. Hats off to the broadcast. You know, I heard people say, well, we couldn't find it. Well, okay. But it was on Fox Sports. They did a pretty good job telling you where it was. And then it was on Big Fox. And I know that our fans are not typically used to going to a major network to watch something. That's not where you would tend to look for it. You think you got to find it somewhere. But, you know, while it might not have been communicated, it was on a very major platform. And I personally am very thankful that Teton Ridge puts quality product out on a major platform. It was a good event, and you can pick it apart. People can pick it apart. But, you know, job well done, Teton, another American in the books. And so, Kendra, I don't know if you have anything.
A couple things I was going to say, but while you were talking, I received a text from a dear old friend saying it was announced that the money would move forward. And I said, by who? And they said the announcing team during the event, which we know that did happen. Mm-hmm. And yet, we don't know. So
we don't know. Nobody knows. But again, I guess it wouldn't shock me that someone or be the first time that someone would change the rules. But so there you have it. You know, we'll all wait and see, because I heard that Casey and Luke and I bet 15 other guys and gals were going to dust off the boots and hit the gym and try to become a featured artist at the 2026 American because of the 2 million. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they said so on the telecast. So I think people are making assumptions, like you said, based on precedent. So we'll see. You know, Casey Field missed the Final Four cut by a quarter of a point. That's wild. Quarter of a point.
He didn't have a horse to win it on.
Well, anyway,
he actually didn't have a horse to advance on. If you want to get into the details
I'm just saying that's really, you know, that I'm not making a judgment. I'm just saying that an observation. Quarter of a point is a quarter of a point. That's like if you don't win the barrel race, which happened recently, like by 1/100th of a second or something. But anyway, so I think very worthy. A few things that jumped out at me. Caleb Driggers and Junior Nogueda won the team roping. And by the way, on the money, I think it was reported that they each got $140,000. They were the only team in the Final Four to get a time. I was trying to figure out the math on that because I think second paid $20,000. Because like you said, Tristan Hutchins was the only guy that made the whistle and the bull riding. And they said he's getting $120,000 because he's the only one, that made the whistle. So he got second place for $20,000. So he got $120,000. Which, by the way, Tristan Hutchins, I thought it was super cool that and great grace that he recognized Dylan Grant, who had, you know, his friend who had recently died. That was very classy. But I was trying to figure out the math on if it's true that Driggers and Nogueda got $140,000. How does that math work? If second's $20,000, and then they got, would it be 15 and 5 for the final four?
I thought it was 120, 10 and 5, but you're right, it would have to be 15 and 5. And so did the team ropers split it there, or do they each get it?
They each get it.
They each get it, okay.
I think that's right. And so, okay, so also kind of interesting that, you know, I know I get in the weeds, but I love the weeds. And so the fact that Driggers and Nogueda advanced, squeaked in fourth place with a leg into the round of 10. Out of the round of 10 into the final four, they barely make it and then they win it. I mean, that was Wild. They were the only team that stopped the clock in the end, but that was one of those deals where going first didn't turn out so bad, but
paid off. Absolutely.
Deckers is now a 5-time American champion. That's wow. And the people have now won it 3 times. Nobody's won it 4. So Driggers is, 5 times all on his own. 3-time winners are now Junior Nogueira, Casey Field, Haley Kinzel, Wade Sundell, and Lisa Lockhart. A little kind of interesting. Driggers also won the very first American in 2014 with Patrick Smith, and this very second American with Travis Graves. So 5 times. He's never been eligible for the million, but he's won over 500 grand at one rodeo in one day at a time.
And I need to clarify something. I need to own up to a very embarrassing mistake, considering I'm the executive director of the Utah Days of 47 Rodeo. I stand corrected. When we negotiated our deal with the PRCA, remember when I told you that they got bucked off, the money went to charity? It was that way at one time. However, when we redid our deal with the PRCA, we do pay ground money now. So I stand corrected as an idiot and not knowing my own rules. Sounds familiar. And I wanted to clarify another couple of things. If you remember a while back, I kind of was a little hard on Casey Field when I watched his ride. Do you remember that at South Point? I think it was. I was like, I think Casey's a little rusty. Well, Casey wasn't rusty in the least bit at the American, and like at all. Now, Luke, I thought Luke looked like he was in his best shape in his life. And Luke is a legacy steer wrestler, but he does draw very, very well. Because that steer was definitely the one I thought you wanted before in the earlier round before, because he didn't advance. So I wanted to clear that up. And if whenever I was actually just challenging Casey a little bit, he came to ride. And the last thing that I'll say is if you doubt Rocker Steiner can ride, watch him at the American. I mean, that kid is incredible, because if he would have gotten, I'm talking 1/100th out of shape, Kendra, he would have just disintegrated. Like, he would have just exploded into 1,000 pieces because of the amount of torque and pressure and the way that he rode that horse. So anyway, a couple cleanup things. I was wrong on our bull riding. So well, there you have it. But
Rocker's 91.75, that was a record. He on Frontier's Breaking News, that was a record. Damian Brennan winning the bronc riding, also 91.75 was his score on Calgary's Exotic Warrior. And Cassie Mowry, 15.055 is a record there at Globe Life. Something interesting happened in the breakaway. The breakaway was great watching. Before we move, that's the last thing I'll mention about the American. But Shelby Boisley Medjid went first, and she was 204, like amazing run. But the barrier pulled really early, and so that was one of those really tricky deals. Like, okay, that starts the clock early, and in such a fast event, But then on the one hand, it starts the clock early, so she's longer. And on the other hand, well, might she have broken, you just don't know. Like, could she have broken it? It's just a very weird deal. But it's like, there were challenges made, and she did throw the challenge flag. But I don't know what they could have done short of giving her a rerun. And if you've got a 204 on the board.
Yeah. It wouldn't have made any sense, right? Because they got to do it in the moment.
I can't imagine a 204, but anyway, okay, so the Cadence Tyndall comes and she's 203 plus 10. And then Martha Angeloni, sister to last year's champ, Sarah Angeloni, is 193. And then Josie Connor's 189. I mean, that was pretty amazing to watch. And by the way, Josie's boyfriend, Riley Webb, is 6'9". He, after pushing her calf, he turns on his 6'9", and then hands you to be 6'7". I mean, it was just that was pretty spectacular competition. So,
And I've never seen that barrier deal. Well, we need to move on. I would be interested. Do you know, have you seen that happen? Like, that was weird because the calf was not tight on the rope in the replay and the barrier releases. Have you seen that happen mechanically before, Kendra?
Yeah, that happens.
Okay. Well, that's just my non-barrier game.
Yeah. But okay. Yeah, you just don't know. So anyway, Well, let's roll.
All right. Well, what we're going to do is the breaking news of the day is the announcement of the 2025 Hall of Fame, PRC Hall of Fame. For me, that's hallowed ground and keeping our legacy alive and giving recognition to the men and women that have made an impact on our sport or are put into the Hall of Fame for whatever reason is a cool thing. So I figured, and everybody may have already heard all this, but in case you hadn't, we'll just run through them. How do you want to run through those since we didn't practice?
I think it would be interesting to just say the basic thing. The big two when it comes to Rodeo Halls of Fame are Colorado Springs, the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame, and the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City. Those are the big two, you know, and Oklahoma City's rebranding as the National Rodeo Hall of Fame. Okay. I just think it's interesting for people who don't know, both of them base the start of the process is a nominations process. Anyone can nominate. In Oklahoma City, I know you have to be a Rodeo Historical Society member, and then you can nominate anybody you want. Colorado Springs, anybody can nominate. So then from there in Colorado Springs, there's an actual selection committee, which, you know, the current one is always confidential. And I will say I was so honored, you know, many years ago to serve on that committee with Harry Vold, Larry Mahan, Bob Tallman, John W. Jones Jr., and Louis Field. It was really cool. And we took it really seriously. And so it's a committee in Colorado Springs. And then in Oklahoma City, how it works is the Rodeo Historical Society Board of Directors takes the nominations and whittles it down. And then puts it on a ballot, and the ballots are mailed to every member of the Rodeo Historical Society, and every single member gets a vote. So it's just interesting that two different halls of fame do it two different ways. So anyway,
great information.
Do you want to start just at, Greg has a graphic up, just start at the top of the, what he's got up. So at the top of the list here is the Livermore Rodeo. I'm not sure why the graphic says Livermore Stockman's Rodeo. I've never heard that. That may be an error. I've never heard it called anything but the Livermore Rodeo. This one's personal for me, being from California. My dad's nickname was Livermore because back in those days, you know how the husbands always waited in the delivery room back in those days. My grandfather dropped my grandmother off at the hospital, and then he went to the Livermore Rodeo and he called the hospital to check. He called the hospital to check on my grandmother and was told they are doing great. And so my dad was born when my grandpa was at the Livermore Rodeo. So my dad's nickname was always Livermore. And I actually won my first buckle at the Livermore Junior Rodeo in the goat tying. So Livermore has always been a special place for my family, but they're over 100 years now, right?
Yeah, they've been around. And here's the thing that I'm glad to see this, because these California rodeos, they go through a lot more to put on these big events, and all those West Coast rodeos. I shouldn't just say California. But they go through a lot more to put on a quality event, and they're much more highly contested. They're in faux territory in a lot of ways, and they step up, they stand out, they put on great events, and they're well attended. And you know, Livermore, having done this for so long, I think rodeo committees need recognition, because none of everything we do happens without them. So
absolutely true. And to for people who don't understand what you're kind of trying to say, politely, is like when people will go out of their way to outlaw mutton busting, for example, which they did, you know, or different things like that. It's like, wow. But anyway, also in the history of our sport, you know, California, my dad's generation, you know, how quickly people forget, but California was an absolute, you know, the original cowboy capital, and an absolute hub of a place where so
I know your rodeo originated in California. I know you there's steep heritage there. It's very, very good. Don't give me the side eye. It's all good. See, people, I have to throw a few of those in so those of you that are watching live can try to read between the lines what Kendra's look means to me. California is a great rodeo state.
Okay, you take the next person. You go ahead and take this next one.
Pete Priscilla. 14 times to the NFR and a world champion.
What I read said 10, so I don't know which it is.
Well, and as a little bit of research has been done on this, I guess we will correct our errors, but there's several of these that the qualifications sometimes don't add up to the years and parentheses and stuff like that. So, but regardless, now I have zero comment because this particular gentleman, I don't know. And it may be because of the time of when he was playing.
1996 world champion. The thing about it, I will say this, Steve Northcott won that 1996 world title with him. They were that's by the time we started having a header and a heeler world champion. So I don't know, you know, they won the NFR average that year in 1996. So I'm not sure what separates those two people.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But you remember, and one thing to consider is that they only get considered if they get nominated. This is true. And so while there may be people sitting out there going, well, why not so-and-so and why not so-and-so? They do have to be nominated to be considered. So if you're passionate about somebody being in the Hall of Fame, get off your derriere, find the application, fill it out, do a submittal with good stuff in there. And that could have been the case, Kendra. I'm just saying that's one thing that very well could have been the case.
And my point is thrown out as a question because this all just happened. And so we haven't had time to dive in and look for all these statistics. I was just curious.
Yeah.
They won the world and the NFR average together in 1996. So I was just curious what may have separated the two Steves.
Well, but did he have again? I don't know if the other guy was nominated or not. But did he have the same amount of qualifications?
And,
I don't either. But it's a good thing to think about.
I will say this: Priscilla's, which by the way, his nickname is Cheese.
Cheese. What's the backstory on Cheese? He's cheesy?
I don't know if we want to know. Cheese is a character. Okay, his partner in winning the NFR average and world title in 1986, Steve Northcott, heads up for his kid Nicky. Because his kid Nicky is 18 years old right now, also heels, and he's a bad cat. And he's going to win and most likely be in Vegas this year. So. That's interesting. Okay, next.
Next slide is.
Okay, Strand T. So Stranti Smith. So he's must be going in as a contestant in the calf roping, tie down roping, presumably. I think 2008 world champion, maybe 10 NFRs. Is that right? I can't read the slide. It's too small.
The graphic says 11 that we have.
Okay. So
but again, I'm not going to hold us to that because this stuff's all over the board.
Right. Okay. And so, so Stran, he also, the year he won the world in 08, I was right there. It is very memorable because I was by like Tallman and, you know, Stran's Miss Rodeo America wife, Jennifer, was doing the TV interviews right there behind the bucking chutes. And it was, you know, they in round 10, instead of doing a victory lap for the round winner, like they do every other night, they bring around the average winner. Well, here Stran does that, does his victory lap, you know, and gets his saddle right there in front of the bucking chutes and is walking out the exit gate. And Jennifer, you know, they pass us all a paper that's, you know, hot off the press of who wins the world. Jennifer, I get chills thinking about this. She starts sobbing and screaming, and she's the one, their eyes meet. And she's like, so there's this right in front of me, these two, she's screaming, she's bawling. Strand's like, what the heck's going on? And that's how he found out he won the world. That was a memorable thing. He had been fastest time of the week for him. He was 7-2, and I remember he rode a little bay mare. Her name just happened to be Destiny. And he's 7-2 in the 10th round, wins the average, wins the world. And that was 5 years after he'd had a stroke, just out of the blue. You know, he couldn't talk, and it was really scary stuff. But anyway,
Stran Smith is a poster boy for quality human, good, you know, he's always been super gracious with me. And every time I've ever seen him, he's been gracious with people and good for Stran. I think that's pretty cool. Congratulations to Stran and the Smith family.
Also, I remember I went to the ranch right after we lost Sean McMullen in that terrible car wreck. And for those, you know, who don't remember, like this lady was driving at night the wrong way on an interstate up in the Northwest, and she turned off her headlights. And she ran into those guys head on. Stran was in that car, in the truck, right? And I think Stran was actually in the trailer. And they had a driver, and Sean was in the front, and Stran was in the trailer. And I went to the ranch right after that happened, and it was like we were all just kind of numb. But Stran had just survived that wreck where he lost his traveling partner. And I remember, you know, I'm kind of a big bruiser. I'm 5'10", and he taught me how to, you know, he had a little calf, and I was flanking. They branded a few and stuff, but he's a great guy. And his sister Celie, of course, his sister Sherry is Tuff Cliff and Cliff Cooper's mom, and Celie has three boys, and one of them is Stetson Best, who's he actually right here in my front yard he's Taylor's just very, very dear friend, and he married my son Taylor out here in my yard. So they're a wonderful family. Anyway, let's keep rolling. Who's next?
Jeff Collins, 2000 PRCA bareback world champion and a 6X qualifier. Now Jeff, I'm pretty sure Jeff is very active in, if I'm right on this, is very active in prepping, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's pretty active in prepping, you know, college and high school, like very active in cultivating a lot of the contestants along the way, specifically in the bareback riding. So, again,
Panola College coached, right? At Panola College in Carthage, Texas, right?
Okay.
And some of these, you know, Will Loomis just won the Bulldogging at the American, you know, and Jeff, I guess, you know, mentors, you know, some of these mentors, bareback riders, some of these guys who go on, you know, then that college kind of becomes known for, you know, and so it's like Panhandle State and Goodwell, where you go down there and you know, you had Robert F. Bauer and Craig Latham as your coaches, you know, Saddle Bronc rider, you know. So anyway, okay.
Hope it helps recruitment. Still don't know if college rodeo guys get NIL deals.
I insist on saying, Matt Altizer, this really makes my day, because Mac Altizer is an absolute rodeo revolutionary, and he changed everything, you know, from the either quiet or the brass bands and the different things. He's the one that brought rock and roll to rodeo, and our whole sport is different. And I'll never forget the first Bad Company rodeo I went to in Lotus, Texas. You've never had more fun. And remember, they had Party Animal, the bull, and they were like a traveling road show. But think about the people that came from Bad Company, you know, a Boyd Polhamus, Benji Bendeley, the music director, right? Those guys all came out of Bad Company rodeo. But I thought, and of course, Max, you know, he was an amazing timed event competitor, son of world champion steer roper Jim Bob Altizer. Those people, they're a cowboy, and ranch cowboys, rodeo cowboys. But I thought Mac Altizer got one of the greatest compliments last November in Oklahoma City, when Trevor Brazil said, Mac Altizer, you never had to go check the list at one of Mac's rodeos, because he took such pride. He was the consummate, ultimate timed event contractor, because him and his crew ran the calves and steers all week. You did not have trash cattle at a Mac out at a Bad Company rodeo. And he took great pride in having amazing timed event cattle. And when they say, like, you don't need to go check what you got, because everything's a chance. And that's something to be so proud of. But Mac, man, how much fun. But he changed everything.
Well, so those of you that don't, maybe you're new to rodeo and you're just a no spinner, so you have good water cooler talk. Mac Altizer broke the mold. And here's the best way I can describe. Mac Altizer's rodeo was like a touring rock and roll show. Okay. In a lot of different, I think he fundamentally, you know, he had tour names for the tours. His set of events had tour names. You know, they worked with, they got rid of the old school music, the, you know, the 6-piece brass bands like I heard in Fort Worth forever. And then they would name animals to match the songs. A lot of the stuff that you see today, that the music players smile and go, look at there, I nailed it. I just played Pretty Woman when Pretty Woman bucked out. Well, that stuff was choreographed in the early days. Penn Brand, you know, is a very brand oriented. He had the Bad Company mark, right? The skull that you, even if you don't know it, you've seen it. One of the best branded and marketed items ever. I mean, he was a revolutionary in the sport, and this was going against code. Now, there was a lot of stuff that they did on rock and roll tours that they probably did on these tours too, but he broke the mold and he went against code. Like, this was an uphill pull, right? Because there were several, lots of people that did not like what Mac Altizer was doing at the time.
Well, so. It was absolutely out of this world. And you, like you said, he did name each year, there was a theme. And I remember, like, one year it was like expect the unexpected, you know, or the different things like that. But those guys, they had a blast, and they made rodeos, I mean, so fun. And I remember going to that first one, and but you know, they gave a freaking horse trailer for the all around. You know, that was cool as heck. Ty won it, and but it was like, you know, the rodeo is over, and I'm sitting there talking to Mac, and I don't really know him, and he's talking to me, and the, you know, there's a music playing, and he starts like getting jiggy while we're just like doing an interview. And it's like, then he takes one of my hands and starts swinging me around the dance floor. And it's like, well, I guess we're going to just have some fun here. And, but I loved every minute of it. I just think, man, I'm so happy for him, that whole crew. And you watch who will show up for him. If Benji Bandelay, Boyd Pulhamus, Casey Duggan, Roach Hedeman, who am I missing? I'm missing somebody.
No, you've caught a bunch of them there.
We'll go Dave Jennings, the photographer. He'll be there. And yeah. But those guys are brothers, man. And they did something really special.
He was a marketing genius. You know, he would go into town, and they had these stickers, and he would take these stickers everywhere. And pretty soon it became a thing to get, you know, a Bad Company sticker in the rodeo communities where they were at. And if you remember Smurf, the bullfighter?
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of the things they would end the show is he would get on a bull backwards
and
ride a bull.
Party Animal. Yeah. Was Party Animal not like a dwarf bull, bucking bull?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And bucked. Yeah. But, you know, he was a showman. He would be the ringling. Right. You know, of rodeo in the early days. And
you know what,
much of what we see.
But with a twist, because Mac was all about the Cowboys. He is a cowboy, and nobody's more about the Cowboys. No producer, stock contractor, anybody else ever has ever been more for the Cowboys than Cowboy Mac Altizer. Right on. Good for him.
Note taken. All right. Harley Tucker, rodeo producer. Do you know much about Harley Tucker?
No, Henry? I don't.
So what I do know, because I worked at Joseph, I clowned and fought bulls at the Joseph days in Joseph, Oregon. That whole family, it's a family tradition. But in the research that I did on Harley Tucker, he was the Harry Vold of his time. He was the start to Rodeo Inc. and the Christensen Brothers, which, if again, that's a generational thing. Some of the major stock contracting firms in the business, the origins were Harley Tucker. And he was, you talk about Mac being a Cowboys cowboy. He was, you know, but most of these guys back in this era, they were the real deal, right? I think he was one of the first, like in the 50s, that signed in the Turtles. Okay, I don't know the exact number, or the first card, like 68. And, you know, and God rest his soul, but he passed away, had a heart attack flanking a horse at a rodeo. And I mean, I would imagine that's exactly how Harley Tucker would want to go. But you know what I think's neat about someone like a Harley Tucker going into the Hall of Fame? So you may be sitting there going, well, you know, I don't even know who they're talking about. That's so long ago. That's the point. We have to preserve these golden icons, these people like Altizer and Harley Tucker. We've got to preserve that, because remember, we want people to walk in the Hall of Fame and learn about the rich history of our sport and bring out a lot of the stories that you and I tell on No Spin, right? The stuff that is going to be forgotten if it's not passed on. So I think this is pretty cool.
Well, and I thought I was really proud of my group, you know, back when I was on that committee with like Harry Vold. We really went out of our road every year to find someone from history who had been overlooked that was very deserving. And anyway, I assume
this is Harley's wife in the picture, but the hat. I hope you guys are watching it. I mean, it's turned up. It's turned straight up white. cocked on the side of her head. I mean, that's classic. That's classic rodeo apparel there.
And he said he was from Joseph, Oregon.
Well, I know that his family has a long history. I think he might be, he's from around there, I believe. But I do know that the Joseph, the Chief Joseph Day's rodeo up there is steeped in his family's tradition, assuming they were part of starting that rodeo.
Yeah.
That's an assumption.
Remember being a kid, and my dad went to vet school with Joe Bergevin, a time to make cowboy from the Northwest, and they had six boys. And so it was me, my two brothers, and those six boys, and we camped at the Chief Joseph Day's rodeo. And my dad was all-around champ there. And then 50 years later, just a couple years ago, my son Taylor went up there and was all-around cowboy. So that was that place. I have such fond memories of playing with the eight boys in the creek there. So,
well, and I know Harley Tucker's in Pendleton's Hall of Fame. You know, Pendleton has their Hall of Fame. I know he's in the Oklahoma City one. And I think they started a fund in his honor. So cool thing. That's worth a Google, by the way, if you want to read about old rodeo history. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Next.
Oh. This one's important to me. This one's important to me. So when I was, you know, I started traveling with my dad when I was 3 years old, and my dad was a barrel man during the Skipper Voss era. And Skipper was the most quiet, humble athlete, bullfighter you've ever met. Like, take a dollar out of his pocket and help anybody at any time. That was the person that Skipper was. But again, what we see today in these freestyle bullfights and bullfighting, it started kind of with Wick Peth, and Wick Peth had kind of a different style, but Skipper Voss was the one who started, and those that are big in the BFO and the UFB, all the bullfighting deals, the step through. And so if you want to know what that is, you know, when a bull Skipper, and that's why they called him the dancer, right? Because when a bull would come at him, the old clowns would take a cape. Most of them had capes, baggy pants, and they would run in front of the bull and take the bull's attention and then run like hell as far as away as they could from the cowboy, hoping to not get hooked so the cowboy could get away. Well, Skipper Voss was one of the first to throw a fake. Right? Pretend like he's going one way, go the other way, and then turn around backwards and do a step through with these bulls. And like, that's the origin of all of this stuff that you see these kids doing in the BFO. And he's a great human. And I believe Skipper's probably in his upper 80s now. And I am so happy that he got in and is alive to see making it, because he's so humble.
You know, and I have a wonderful memory from the last year or two. Skipper was inducted in Oklahoma City, and it was a cool thing. He was up on the stage, and he is very, very humble and was very, very quiet. You know, he was honored, but he wasn't going to brag about himself. And, you know, Rob Smits jumped up there and he took a chair up there and was showing people that step through move you're talking about. Using a chair.
Oh, really?
Rob, you know, the kamikaze kid came along behind Skipper and was a five-time, you know, bullfighting champ, world champ. But that was a pretty cool moment, because it was like, you know, Rob, who's now, you know, got to be 65 years old, he was like the kid up there on that stage, but he was showing us all with that chair, you know, the step through move that Skipper. So Skipper, he was a world champion bullfighter, 82.
Correct.
And worked a couple of NFRs. Right.
Yeah. And when he won his Wrangler bullfight, he was in his 40s.
And that was 82. He'd worked the NFR in 74 and 78. So, yeah. So then, you know, so obviously he had a lot of game.
Yeah. He's super cool. Cool human. Love Skipper. So happy that he made it in there. And he's a Waco, Texas. I think he lives down by Waco, Texas. So congratulations, Skipper. Your turn.
Okay, so Todd Miller, I just have a few notes, and I remember probably 3 or 4 years ago visiting with him in Oklahoma City. He's a very, you know, lovely gentleman. He won the NFR. He went to 6 NFRs, won the NFR average 3 times, so half the times he was there. I remember talking to him about this face-to-face. He lost the world title in 1975 to Bobby Berger by $5.
$5.28.
Yeah. So, you know, that's interesting. Now, he's being inducted as a notable. And for people who don't know, one of the criteria for being inducted as a contestant is a minimum of a world title. So he will go in as a notable, which I will say people like Denny Flynn and Ace Berry have gone in as notables.
I think, though, when he lost it by $5.28, I think that was when they were doing the 10 head.
It was the year after. It was 1979.
Okay.
They did the sudden death, whoever wins the most at the NFR in 76, 77, and 78. That happened in 79. Yeah.
All right. What do we got next? Congratulations to the Millers. Well, this has got to be right down your alley, so I'm going to let you go. RTR Little Willie.
So, Willie. So Curtis Cassidy's, and I don't know if Curtis's dad Greg was in on him or not, but Willie was. It was interesting because I asked Oat. I'm like, what about Willie? And at the end of Oat's career, he was telling me today. So Curtis was hauling Willie around as a backup horse, and not very many people were riding him or whatever. Well, so. Who was it? Lee Graves tells Oat, I think he's his backup horse because he doesn't make a move. He just runs straight by, and which that's what Oat liked in a horse. And so he rode him, like he tried him out, and he rode him like at Oakdale and stuff and won Oakdale on him and stuff. And he was like, you know, he liked him. And he ended up, he had a chance to buy him. And it was one of those deals where the timing wasn't right. And he probably lived to somewhat regret that. But that horse, Rope Myers won the world on him in 01. Lee Graves won the world on him in 05. Jason Miller in 07. And Luke Branquino in 08. That's a pretty stout resume. And what Oat mentioned also was he was so good at those big outdoor rodeos. But then how he shined in that little building at the Thomas and Mack was, you know, to be so good at, you know, such a range of places was really special.
Well, and I heard that they would... I heard one particular time they loaded him up after Calgary in a trailer, little horse, and drove all the way to like Prescott, right? And unloaded him, and 7 guys rode him in slack. You know, I guess it's one of those heart of a champion horses. I had asked Casey Jones about this horse, and he said, well, this is one of those deals where I was too proud to. I wanted to ride my horses and I should have rode him. So, you know, that's cool. I love when animals are highlighted.
Congratulations to the Cassidys. Okay. I'm going to cut in line and go next.
Okay.
When we get this. Okay. There's Miss Pam Martin Minnick. And, an absolute pioneer woman among women, you know, broadcasters. But I think it's, you know, the WPRA for the last few years, they send 2 women to the Hall of Fame party each summer now. And both of the women being honored this year, let's just say it, both of them were Miss Rodeo Americas and also world champions. And Pam was Miss Rodeo. Well, Joyce, she had a lot of different last names. It ended up being Pernick, but she was married to Barry Burke for a while. And anyway, she has a few different last names, but Joyce Kernick ended up being her final name. And she was the 1970 world champion barrel racer after being the 1963 Miss Rodeo America, and Pam was the 1973 Miss Rodeo America, and then went on to be the 1982 WPRA World Champion Breakaway Roper. But for me, Cam Minnick, one thing that I've been just a little bit, you know, grind teeth a little bit in recent times is when people make, false claims of being like the first to do this or that with the women broadcasters. Nobody beat Pam Minnick to the punch on being, she had a rodeo announcer card. She was on network television, you know, with like Larry Mahan and being an absolute analyst, commentator, you know, she was a front lines, she blazed a trail here. And what can you say? She worked so hard, put her on a board and watch her work. She's been on so many boards, our heads would spin. But she has, she's one of those kind of tireless, and when she takes something on, she takes it on and succeeds. And so it's hard for me to say enough about Pam Minnick. Her contributions are great. She's not just a pretty face. She's worked her ass off.
Well, Pam has been a friend of the Lucia family forever. I've known Pam. I mean, it's a hug. You know, it's close friend of our family. She's been fabulous. If you didn't know it, her husband, Billy, is in the Hall of Fame, I'm pretty sure, and she'll be joining him. And they own Billy Bob's Texas, which is the famed country and western club at the historic Fort Worth Stockyards. And they've had that forever. They put a bull riding arena in there. If you haven't ever, if you're new in rodeo and want to go experience that, Billy Bob's is pretty cool. But Pam is just, you know, Fort Worth, every perf, right? Pam is there. And Pam's the kind of person, like you said, that's willing to do anything for anybody to help out, to make, you know, she's never been above anything. And she is, without exception, a class act. And I'm so very, very happy that she's being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yep. She will roll up her sleeves and get down and work. So, okay. And we also should mention that this year's Pioneer Award is going to Red Stegall.
Yep. Congratulations, Red. Red Stegall's got the Pioneer Award, the Pioneer Award's, I think, kind of separate, isn't it? It's like a lasting impact. I tried to
like
read
a special award. It's not an induction, yeah. But it's a special award for sort of a lifetime achievement type thing.
Because I think they present this on a Friday before the Saturday inductions. I think they do a special event, maybe that includes the Pioneer Award. When, you know, Red Stegall, the Hollywood, from Hollywood to radio, to everything, to music, to everything in between, he sported the cowboy hat and the true cowboy culture. So
is this, do you know, I don't know what the criteria is for that Pioneer Award, but I don't know, like, I know he sang the song about rodeo. But I don't know what his exact rodeo roots are. I know he loves rodeo. I don't know what all specifically in rodeo. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure that I don't know. I'd have to research to see if he competed or anything. But I think it's someone that's had an impact on, which everybody is. But like maybe it's someone outside of the competition circles that's had a major impact on the Western lifestyle. And Red Stegall definitely fits into that category.
Yeah, well, I think that's
all right. All right. Well, did we skip one? Did we get to the other? We didn't talk about the one, the other WPRA. Did we talk about both of them?
I have to say about Joyce, okay. Joyce Koenig, okay. But right. I mean, if you have other things, feel free.
No, I don't. I just have a bad memory. Well, so congratulations to everybody, the 2025 inductees to the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in Colorado Springs, right next to the PRCA headquarters. If you haven't went there and looked at that event or that venue, it's beautiful, it's well done, and it's cool. It's cool to see it. And, you know, don't forget that these curations like this, If you're out there and you're a rodeo committee, you're a sponsor, you're someone, and you're trying to figure out what in the rodeo business you could help, these type of things don't make money. And they need to continue to go. And I know it's charitable contributions and things of this sort that keep Hall of Fames like this going down the road, and stopping by and attending and going and seeing it helps fund it. So don't drive through, don't drive south on that interstate or north and not pull in and check out the Hall of Fame, because it's pretty dang cool. So, well, we accomplished our goals for today. And any final thoughts from Kendra or Greg before we call it a day on No Spin Rodeo?
I was just going to mention that, to put a button on it, the induction ceremonies will be July 12th this summer. And I'm certain that that's in conjunction with the NFR Open. It has been the last several years.
Do you go to that? Do you go to the induction?
It depends if I have, specific, usually if, sometimes I've had conflicts over the years, but there have been times when, like, it was somebody so close to me, or like when Cody Ole was inducted and he was in the hospital and couldn't go, he had me accept on his behalf. And so it just kind of, year to year, I did go last year. I couldn't not be there for guys like Casey Field and Trevor, amazing.
Well, so that kind of wraps it up for this episode. Now, just a little flashback. I wanted to clarify what you said, Kendra. Did you say you like getting into the weeds, or you like getting into wheat? Which one did you say earlier today?
Getting into the weeds, the details, the deets. Did you say the weed? I don't even know what you said.
Anyway, so if you heard me and chuckled with me, and that flew right over. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back next Tuesday live. Thanks for sticking it out with us. Thank you for listening to us on the podcast. This is No Spin Rodeo. Be blessed. We'll see you next time.